Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Ready from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 7. Scheduled incarnations, text number 13.
Chiro dadhava maradana vayuttapanam. Unmatnatam amrita labdhaya adi devaha. Prishtena kascha pavapur vidadara gotram. Nidrakshano driparivarta kashana kanduhu. Shira, milk, Udadho, in the ocean of Amara, the demigods, Danava, the demons, Yuttapanam, of the leaders of both hosts, Unmatnatam, while churning. Amrita, nectar, labdhaya, for gaining, Adi Devaha, the primeval Lord, Prishtena, by the backbone, Katschapa, tortoise, Vapahu, body, Vididhara, assumed. Gotram, the Mandara Hill, Nidrakshanaha, while partly sleeping, Adri Parivarta, rolling the hill, Kashana, scratching, Kanduhu, itching. Translation, the primeval Lord then assumed the tortoise incarnation in order to serve as a resting place, pivot, for the Mandara mountain, which was acting as a churning rod. The demigods and demons were churning the ocean of milk with the Mandara mountain in order to extract nectar. The mountain moved back and forth, scratching the back of Lord Tortoise, who, while partially sleeping, was experiencing an itching sensation. Purport. Although it is not in our experience, there is a milk ocean within this universe. Even the modern scientist accepts that there are hundreds and hundreds of thousands of planets hovering over our heads. And each of them has different kinds of climatic conditions. Srimad Bhagavatam gives much information which may not tally with our present experience. But as far as Indian sages are concerned, knowledge is received from the Vedic literatures. And the authorities accept without any hesitation that we should look through the pages of authentic books of knowledge. Shastra Chakshurvat. So we cannot deny the existence of the ocean of milk as stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam unless and until we have experimentally seen all the planets hovering in space. Since such an experiment is not possible, naturally we have to accept the statement of Srimad Bhagavatam as it is, because it is so accepted by spiritual leaders like Sridhar Swami, Jiva Goswami, Vishwanath Chakravarti, and others. The Vedic process is to follow in the footsteps of great authorities. And that is the only process for knowing that which is beyond our imagination. The primeval Lord, being all-powerful, can do whatever he likes. And therefore he's assuming the incarnation of a tortoise or a fish for serving a particular purpose is not at all astonishing. Therefore we should not have any hesitation whatsoever in accepting the statements of the authentic scriptures like Srimad Bhagavatam. A gigantic work of churning the milk ocean by the combined effort of the demigods and the demons required a gigantic resting ground or pivot for the gigantic Mandara Hill. Thus, to help the attempt of the demigods, the primeval Lord assumed the incarnation of a gigantic tortoise swimming in the ocean of milk. At the same time, the mountain scratched his backbone as he was partially sleeping and thus relieved his itching sensation. So, what is our process as recommended here by Srila Prabhupada and elucidated by Rupa Goswami? What's that process for receiving knowledge? Two aspects of it that are mentioned here. What's the first one? Or maybe three, or possibly even four. Yes, very good. Disciplic succession. Or what does Prabhupada say in the purport? Yes, following the authorities. What's Prabhupada's argument? Yeah. But what's Prabhupada's argument about accepting the milk ocean's existence in other planets? That's right. No, that's not why we have to accept the Vedic knowledge. That's why we can't know whether there's a milk ocean or not. But we accept the instruction of the Srimad Bhagavatam because it's accepted by the previous acharyas who are self-realized, who are learned, who are experienced in this process of receiving transcendental knowledge through the parampara system. And part of that parampara system is to receive the knowledge of the Srimad Bhagavatam, just like Prabhupada gives the example of the different faculties of learning in the university. Each faculty has their section of literature within the library. Right? The library is the place where one goes to find authoritative statements on that faculty or on that body of learning. The professors, the lecturers, the tutors, they're the authorized representatives of that learning. And they're able to give us clarification on any questions that we might have. And so the school, if you like, is made up of the literature and it's made up of the teachers. The teachers are the persons who... And so we have... What do we have? We have jnana, knowledge, and we have vijnana, practice. How to take the knowledge and put it into practice. Very important. You know, Prabhupada says, we're not just armchair philosophers who sit around studying all day long. In fact, certainly we study. We should study Srila Prabhupada's books. But our goal is not to, and we can see that from Srila Prabhupada's example. He set aside time to study and to write. But he was also very, very active in putting that learning and knowledge into practice. So the purpose of acquiring knowledge is not just to be knowledgeable, which is certainly important, but more important is to know how to put that knowledge into practice for the benefit of others. Dharma samstapanataya, that's Krishna's purpose, is to establish religious principles. And so therefore he expounds, he gives the Vedic knowledge, comes from his breathing. But any kind of learning or knowledge, if it's not put into practice, then it's kind of useless. Or it's just a show bottle. So this is one of the ways that we can test. What's the most important test of the qualification of a person? Prabhupada says. How they speak. If he's waffling all nonsense, then we know he's a nonsense. But if a person is speaking, there's still further tests. Because, you know, especially, you know, in some places there's a lot of talking but not action. Or the action is different. And so there's a disparity. So there has to be knowledge, presentation of knowledge, but then putting it into practice. And that's our system. This is the Vedic system. We follow the standard literature, Srimad Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, books like the books of the Goswamis, especially Rupa Goswami. We're Rupa Nugas. He's Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam. He understood the mind of Lord Chaitanya. He received instructions from Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya told him, write books to clarify this whole process. So we have in, you know, especially in the Upadeshamrita and the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, you know, we have specific instructions. Do this, don't do that. And there's a purpose for that. The purpose for following the instructions is to realize the knowledge and to put it into practice. And you know, that practice is demonstrated in the activities of the Krishna consciousness movement. The Rath Yatra festival, actually pretty much the culmination of all of our activities, if you think about it. Prasadam distribution, kirtan, knowledge, association of the devotees, very, very powerful. This is a direct practice and a practical demonstration of the culture of Krishna consciousness. Festivals, having fun, enjoying. And this is what Krishna's doing here. He had a bit of an itch on his back. You know, and it's pretty hard to get to. Sometimes you've got to get an itch. Huh? And he's a tortoise. He's got an itchy back. So what does he do? He creates a situation where the demons and the demigods have to cooperate. Cooperation is pretty much paramount. In the Krishna consciousness movement, you know, this is how things get done. When there's no cooperation, then what do you have? A disaster. Right? When you think about it, the success of a big festival is the result of many hours of preparation and much cooperation, communication, discussion, sharing of information, amalgamation of all this information and then putting it into play. So that many devotees said to me yesterday, they said, "Oh, this is the best organized Rath Yatra." Actually, it's a bit embarrassing. They come up and thank me and they say, "Oh, I only read it. Thanks for the Rath Yatra. This is the best organized Rath Yatra I've ever seen." And I have to say to them, "Well, I didn't have anything to do with it." Krishna's mercy. So, as a result of understanding the mission of Lord Chaitanya, Rupa Goswami gave us instructions. Certainly, we have to study the Shastra, but we have to understand the conclusion of the Shastra, following in the footsteps of personalities like Rupa Goswami. In fact, that's what we do. And that means putting it into practical application, and we do that basically by following Srila Prabhupada. And we can see here that Lord Kurma, right? Isn't it? Kurma has created this very interesting situation. To enjoy. You know, Krishna enjoys seeing the devotees working together to preach. Krishna says, "There is no one more dear to me than he who distributes this knowledge of the Bhagavad Gita to the devotees." And our vision is that everybody is a devotee. Right? Krishna has brought the demons and the demigods together to cooperate. And, you know, their desire was to get the Amrita. They each wanted to get the Amrita, right? And there was an argument over who was going to hold the end of the, which end of the snake they would hold. It's more prestigious to hold the head, right, than the backside, but more dangerous also. So there was a fight. The demons eventually held the head, didn't they? Yeah. And then there was when the nectar came from the churning, then there was a squabble over that, wasn't there? That's when Mahini Murti came. So. Krishna arranges these very extraordinary activities, many of which appear to be almost, fanciful. What? When I was at Karam Downs temple yesterday, and I noticed they had all these pictures around the room of their dining hall. And quite a few ISKCON pictures I noticed also, actually. And there was... But they were described as being mythology. Myths. Because, you know, some of these... You know, why would the Lord assume the form of a boar, for example? You know, a pig is a really low-class animal. Just as an example. Because today is the appearance day of... You know, and when you see the boars, when you see the pigs in India, it's like, whoa, stinky fellows. So why would Krishna do that? Why would he become a boar? Here is a tortoise. Sometimes a fish. So it's hard for people to... It's like very difficult for persons to accept. First of all, because they think, well, I couldn't do that. And if I can't do it, that means nobody can do it. Without understanding that you know, by his desire, he can do anything. You know, what does Prabhupada say? The primeval Lord, being all-powerful, can do whatever he likes. And when he accepts the form of a boar, that doesn't mean that he becomes a boar. Because everything that he does and everything about him is purely transcendental, divyam. He's not, when he appears, he's not pushed like we are. We may be pushed into the body of a pig as a result of our karma and have to suffer as a consequence. And so, yes, therefore, that's not pleasant. You know, when we see the boar, the pig with his snout in the sewer, snorting up the stools, he thinks he's having a great time, and we're thinking, oh my God. You see the pigs at Govardhan, and the bungies sweep up all the piles of rubbish. I remember one of my favourite, actually, I've got a photograph of it. There was this big pile of rubbish on the road coming into Govardhan, and then on top of the pile of rubbish, there's a pig lying on his side. And he's dreaming away, oh, this is great. But we're looking at it and we're thinking, this is disgusting. Your bed is a pile of rubbish. And in India, you know, the rubbish is pretty stinky. Huh? But when the Lord appears, he's not forced by the laws of karma. His activities are purely transcendental and with a purpose. His purpose was to, just as the boar goes down and extracts things from filthy places, so he also went down to the bottom of the universe to raise the earth up after it had been dislodged by the activities of the demons. It had been dislodged and fallen into the ocean at the bottom of the creation. So a transcendental form with transcendental activities with a transcendental purpose. That's the Lord's mission. And we understand that mission by signing up to the school or to the faculty, you know, just as one learns a trade or an occupation by going to university, right? Dave's a horticulturalist. So how did he learn his trade? He went to school. Dr. Stretch is an artist, right? She puts her craft into practice, but she's also a doctor of, what is it? Fine art?
Master.
Oh, only a master. You don't mind if we call you doctor, though, do you?
Yeah.
She's an artist who knows how to paint, but has also studied the, you know, so there's the, as I was saying, there's the jnana, and there's the vijnana, putting it into practice. So we're also in the same line. The line of disciplic succession is the same principle is involved. We study the literature. We hear from the teachers. In previous ages, this knowledge was, the knowledge of the Vedas was recited by the acharyas. You know, prior to Kali Yuga, then the quality of the human beings was far more elevated, and so therefore, you know, they were shrutidhara, which means having heard something, they would remember it. And so in that way, then, the Vedic literature was a recitation. Just as Sukadeva Goswami spoke the Srimad Bhagavatam to Maharaj Parikshit, Sukadeva Goswami heard the Srimad Bhagavatam from Vyasadev while he was still in the womb of his mother at 16 years of age. And the sages at Naimisharanya heard the Srimad Bhagavatam from Sudha Goswami, who was present when Sukadeva Goswami was speaking to Maharaj Parikshit. So it's an oral tradition. Originally, that was how the system worked, and so therefore one had to hear from the teacher, because it wasn't written. But when Vyasadeva saw that the quality of the human beings in Kali Yuga would be degraded, then he compiled the Vedic literature, the Mahabharata and the Vedanta and the Upanishads and finally the Puranas, Puranic literature. Seeing, again, understanding what the Lord's mission is. The Lord's mission is to establish transcendental knowledge. You know, in one sense, the Lord must have extraordinary activities that are outside of our experience. He must have it, because that's what makes him different. He's not bound or beholden to the laws of nature. He creates the laws. And he demonstrates his superiority by transcending the standard laws to show that he's the supreme personality of Godhead. Not to be imitated. We should follow his instructions and follow his example, but those extraordinary affairs and activities that he performs that demonstrate he's the supreme are not to be imitated by the likes of us. They're meant to be understood in terms of his personality and character and his unique, of course we're all unique, but he's unique, uniquely unique. So just because something is outside of our experience doesn't mean that it can't happen. That's what Prabhupada is saying here. There are hundreds and hundreds of thousands of planets hovering over our heads. Right? And each of them has different climatic conditions. So in one of those planetary systems, there's an ocean of milk. Just like we've got an ocean of salt water, so there's an ocean of milk. And, you know, what do you do with milk? Yeah, you churn it. You turn it into butter. You turn it into... You separate the cream. Right? That's what the churning is. The churning is separating the cream from the milk. This is, you know, just see how cow protection and, you know, milk, ghee, cooking with ghee is primordial. Right? The primordial soup has got milk in it. For those who want to, you know, well, for those who have to avoid milk, want to avoid milk, but really, you know, it's part of the culture. Krishna's called Gopal. He's the friend of the cows. Cows produce milk. So, Srimad Bhagavatam and the other literature gives, Prabhupada says, it gives much information which may not tally with our present experience. But our process is, and Prabhupada says it, as far as Indian sages are concerned, not only, you know, Indian sages, but all sages, following in the footsteps, satovritte, very important principle. We accept the authority of the Shastra as being absolute, not mythology. Mythology means something made up. Why would this, and this is the point, why would the sages, why would the great saintly persons who are self-realized, self-controlled, you know, accept stories that are made up? They wouldn't. So, because we can't experimentally prove all of these statements, impossible, and because we accept in good faith the instructions of the previous acharyas and their experience and their guidance and their realization of the subject matter, then we also, as part of our system, part of our process, accept these descriptions. The Vedic process is to follow in the footsteps of great authorities, and that is the only process for knowing that which is beyond our imagination. And therefore we accept the wonderful activities and pastimes of Lord Kurma and Lord Varaha on his appearance day. Does anybody have any comments or questions? What is it? It was a liquid. That's about all I know. They didn't give me any to drink. you'd have to read that section. I think it was, you got that nectar, then you could live forever, wasn't it? One of the demons snuck in, Rahu. And got to drink some. But he had his one drop, but he got his head chopped off. So his head was... you have to read the story. I've forgotten all the details. Yeah.
Thank you for the two contentions as followed by people outside the emotional circle. First is that this standard of understanding, this approach to understanding things which are beyond our experience. You know the Pastafarians? It's an atheistic group.
Who?
Pastafarians.
Never heard of them. Where are they from?
They're from Europe, but now they're international. There was some guy, he put a collar on his head, and he said it's my religious article.
Oh, Pastafarians. I get it.
So I
can't take them seriously.
They say that how do you know there is not a pasta monster in the outer space when you haven't experienced it, and how can you deny it? So
no, we can't deny it that you're crazy.
And they say that because you haven't seen it, therefore it must be, this argument is invalid. With the silly argument.
Well, yeah, so we would say, look, sorry, but Pastafarians are not mentioned in the authorised literature. And so, I didn't mention it, but, you know, our system is Sadhu, sorry, Shastra, Sadhu and Guru. But really Shastra and Sadhu, because the guru is a sadhu. And, you know, we have more than one guru. But, as Prabhupada points out, the guru teaches the same message. Even though he manifests severally, or in many forms, the message that is taught by the many forms of the spiritual master is the same. But it always conforms with the Shastra. And so, unfortunately, in the scheduled incarnations, the Pastafarians are not mentioned. And it, you know, just between you and me, it sounds like you made it up. So, you know, just because you make something up doesn't make it true. And because we can't disprove it doesn't make it true either. Because you made it up. So in that case then, you know, that logic is faulty. It's faulty logic. You can't prove anything that somebody's made up. And just because you can't prove it doesn't make it true. Right? Because you just made it up. It's true because you made it up. But that's about the substance of its truth. It's true that you've made something up, and it's true it exists in your head. But that doesn't mean that it exists anywhere else. Right? You know, a prep child in prep could defeat that argument. Mahatmaji.
What I was saying is that Srila Prabhupada emphasizing in his work, descending process.
Yes, that's right. The descending process. Yeah. That's what it is.
The second point, because there is the transcendental law, this transcendental form, and like you mentioned, to understand this transcendental activity and this transcendental purpose, we have to hear. Now, another set of people say, okay, we accept everything that you're saying, transcendental law, transcendental activities, transcendental purpose. But the person who is giving it is a person like you and me. So why should we accept him? We should just access the scriptures at our own. So their argument is, everything is transcendental. How could a person who is conditioned give transcendental knowledge?
First of all, the scriptures recommend that we study and scrutinize the scriptures in the association with learned persons. So the scriptures themselves tell us that's what we should do. The persons who are qualified to who we should associate with and who are qualified to hear from, are also, their qualifications are also given within the scripture. So, whilst the persons who are speaking on transcendental knowledge may appear as ordinary persons, and so therefore with the faults of ordinary persons, if they're following the guidelines as given in the scripture itself, then as a result of following properly, and that is appearing in disciplic succession, that's part of the process that's recommended within the books. Those defects are gradually eradicated or removed from the character of those persons. That's why we follow them, because they're faultless in character. And we can test their character by looking at the criteria that are given within the literature. Right? So we have a, you know, the books themselves describe the process. And so we can always confirm that. The qualification of the speaker is that he should be a follower of the previous acharyas, sato vritte. And the degree to which the follower abides by the instructions of his spiritual master or spiritual masters, then that degree determines the authenticity and the qualification in their or in themselves being able to present that knowledge and you know, gain understanding. Because effectively, as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Tesham Satata Yuktanam, Bhajatam Pritipurvakam, Tadami Buddhijogam Tam. I give them the understanding by which they can come to me. Right? And that understanding can be that understanding of that individual can be understood, as I said previously, by the most important test of a person, and that's by how they speak. But then also we see how they act. That we look again at the Shastra. And so we see, yes, there's concordance. This person speaks and acts. His actions and his speech are consistent. They're in concordance with each other. Those acts, those deeds, his speech, they all concord with the instructions that are given within the text. And so therefore it's mutually conclusive or inclusive, right? So Prabhupada says, you know, the apprentice may not be fully a master of his art or of his trade, right? But if he follows the instructions of the master, then he's as good as the master. So, you know, a master bricklayer oversees the work of an apprentice who's, Brian would know this, he's a bricklayer, who's building a wall, right? He may not be a master builder, but if he builds a wall according to the instructions of the master builder, then the wall is as good as if the master builder had built it. Right? How many brick walls have you built, Brian? Many. A few. They're still standing? Not all of them. That's only because somebody knocked them down, not because they fell down.
How the people who have all these contentions, they're always focused on finding the qualification of the speaker or of the book or of the philosophy, but they don't focus on the qualification of their own.
No, they're already perfect, you see.
They don't want to focus on the...
When you're perfect, you don't have to work on yourself. Everybody else has got faults. The book has got a fault. The person's got a fault. But that's the other thing. There may even be some... The Vedas are not easy. This is the other point. The Vedic literature is not easy to understand because it covers such a range of information and is meant to try to give principles for many, many circumstances. And so to understand what principle is being presented, and in some cases, those principles are being presented according to time, place and circumstance. And so their application is going to be different. Right? But one has to understand the principle. Then one can easily be bewildered and confused by the variety of applications and the variety of principles that are being presented. That's why we need the teacher. That's why we go to school. To learn what the principles are. This is what Rupa Goswami says, you know, we're presenting principles, but sometimes the guru will adjust the principles according to time, place and circumstance. This is an important point, very important point. When we see the teachings of some of the prophets and preachers, it's different. It's different. And it appears to be contradictory. And so therefore sometimes you get these clashing of so-called religions. Right? When people just misunderstand that this is a principle that's been applied in a particular way according to the Kala Desha Patra, according to the time, place and circumstance. This is one of the key characteristics of an acharya, especially somebody like Srila Prabhupada, who understood how to apply principles according to time, place and circumstance and how to adjust them. So great personalities are able to do that and establish religious traditions based on those principles, but an application according to time, place and circumstance, which may over time and according to different places change. Doesn't mean that, you know, one is superior to the other. It's just designed for a particular location. So, you know, diversity, seeing unity in diversity requires a very transcendental vision. Not everybody has that. And so they look at the diversity and they say, oh, too confusing, doesn't make sense. Whereas somebody who understands the higher purpose and the higher principles is able to see the unity in diversity. Is that all right? Anybody else? Make sense? Who's tired after yesterday? Only one honest person here. Everybody else is, or either that or they're very healthy. Too tired to put their hands up. Yeah. Anyway, the show must go on, and it does. I'd like to thank, of course, everybody's not here. There's so many devotees, especially Bhakta and Prabhu and all the devotees organising everything. Great. Success, I think. Any comments about the festival yesterday? You were dancing like a 16-year-old. He's a 60-year-old, 16-year-old. Okay. Gantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Gaura Bhakta Brinda Ki Jai.